Good evening, everyone. Happy Blooms Day. James Joyce's great book, Ulysses, takes place on this day in 1904 in Dublin. And it so happens that in the book, it's a Thursday. So that makes this even more Blooms Day than ever, because it's Thursday, June 16th. So it's always a very special day for me and for many other people who have read and love Ulysses. And it's always a good reminder for us. Ulysses is the record of one ordinary day. Just a Thursday, like any other Thursday. One ordinary man, Bloom, going about his everyday life. He's every man, living everything. He's like the true man of no rank. And everything, his life is full in this day. Many adventures, many episodes. It starts off in the morning when he's making breakfast, and well, actually it starts when another character is Stephen Dedalus is starting his day with breakfast, but starts in the morning and it ends after midnight with Bloom's wife, her famous monologue. She's in bed trying, she can't sleep, and it's what she's thinking about as it's her story, the last episode. But the beauty and the way, the reason that I call it a Buddhist book, a Zen book, is because it's everything is equal. So breakfast, going to a funeral, talking to an employer, meeting friends, going to the pub, going to work, going to the brothel, walking on the beach, it's all equal. We have this koan, the Dharma is equal, no high, no low. So the prostitutes are no lower than the priest who's saying mass in the church. It's all equal. And it's really the present moment of each moment throughout the day. As Bloom goes about Dublin, just this moment. And that's why we celebrate Bloom's Day, because it's celebrating that. People read the text, there's like marathon readings of the book, there's performances. I have a friend in New York who is going to a performance tonight. In a place in, I think it's at Lincoln Center in New York, which is a renowned performance space. And it's supposedly a reading of Ulysses in 90 minutes. I don't see how they could do that. Unless they have, hundreds of people reading all at once, different episodes, I don't know, but. So I'm curious to know how that comes out. And the person, as some of you know, who have done some work around Ulysses with me, Bloom is, for me, the Bodhisattva archetype, because he's making his way around the city. He incarnates basic goodness. One of the main episodes in the book, one of the key things that happens in the book is an act of kindness and compassion that Bloom shows to another character, Stephen Dedalus, who is in trouble. And that changes then what happens in the story. And Stephen has been wandering around this city with this question that he asks himself early in the book. What is the one, what is it? What is the word known to all men, to all people? He asks himself this. And Bloom ends up showing this to him. Love. The spiritual premise of the book is love. And it's quite extraordinary that it should be considered this literary monument, you know, this landmark of literary modernism, you know, a classic. And it's all about love. It's also a path, it's a, you know, it's like other books like Dante or Homer. It's a voyage along a path of awakening. It's our awakening too as we go along with it. And it's a process of atoning. There's a lot of atonement going on and awakening to one's true being. Whether it's the three main characters who are affected by it, who realize this. So, so even though I don't talk about it so much anymore, I still am inspired by it and occasionally quote from it. And let's say, think about it a lot. and this weekend while I was at a meeting of other teachers from our lineage, White Plum lineage. And among them was a woman from Dublin who is a teacher in our lineage, who I had already met online in the course that I teach for teachers. But I had never met her in person and we hadn't really had any time to just talk, you know? And so one night when we were talking, I mentioned that my work with Ulysses and my love for Joyce and my obsession is what I say sometimes. And she was very excited and we started talking and she teaches architecture in Dublin. And I just randomly said, we were talking, she was saying that, you know, Dublin has changed and yet hasn't changed in the days since Ulysses. And so I just randomly said, the scene when they go to the brothel, is that neighborhood still the same? It's kind of, in the book, it's kind of a, you know, low rent, often what red light districts are like. Place, dangerous. And she said, it's interesting that you should ask because it has been destroyed. That neighborhood has been eliminated. But with her architecture class, her students, she did a project for them where they read Ulysses. They at least read that episode. And then they reconstructed the neighborhood. They went and looked at the neighborhood as it is now, and according to Joyce's descriptions and his writing, they reconstructed, I guess, I don't know exactly how, but, and did a whole study on the architecture of that neighborhood. And I had no idea when I said that to her. I just randomly picked that episode. And she was intrigued by my Buddhist reading of it, and yet she understood when I described it. Jung, you know, the psychoanalyst Jung, said Ulysses was an Eastern Bible. He saw also the spiritual Eastern influence. He didn't say Buddhist, he said Eastern. And said it should be studied like a Bible, which I have done, but not many people do, I don't think. And it's also a map of Dublin. Joyce said, if Dublin were somehow destroyed, it could be rebuilt using my book. And that's exactly what this teacher, Mary, had done with her students. It's also a map of what it is to be human, what it is to be a human being and to spiritually what it is to be a human being. So, as always on June 16th, I think about it. And think about Joyce and what his he looks at the parts of the whole. He sees the whole and he looks at the parts, studies the parts. And it reminded me, someone recently asked me, I had cited a French poet a few weeks ago or a month or so ago, who had said something about looking, in order to see the depth, you should look at the surface. And she asked me for the quote and it was in French, so I had to translate it. So I did. And so the quote is, to know the depth of something, begin by stopping on the surface. Don't neglect it. Study it closely. Otherwise, you will be inventing the depth much more than you will be discovering it. So this is fascinating. We need to look at the surface. Usually we think we shouldn't pay attention to the surface of things, that we should look beyond the surface. And yet, as Joyce shows in his book, he's looking at the surface. And he's not considering it as being the surface. He's considering it as a part of the whole, of a manifestation of the whole, which is what we all are. We are each a manifestation of the one. Or as Bernie Glassman, I came across this quote that just had nothing to, I just happened to be in my notebook when I was looking through it today. And it's from his book, The Dude and the Zen Master, which he wrote with Jeff Bridges, the actor Jeff Bridges, who played the dude in the Coen Brothers movie, The Big Lebowski. Anyone know that movie? Yeah. So Jeff Bridges played the dude. And he's, you know, become kind of a cult character, and they quote the dude all the time. The dude abides and stuff. So, but he's a Zen practitioner and he studied with Bernie Glassman, the actor Jeff Bridges. So in that book, there's this quote from Bernie who says, the bodhisattva sees that there is no separate self, and that everything is one. But in order to fulfill his vow to free all beings, he will work with all of the pieces. He will recognize Jeff, he's talking about Jeff Bridges, he will recognize Jeff as separate from Bernie, Sue, or Eve. Sue is Jeff Bridges' wife and Eve was Bernie's wife. And work with him as a separate entity. That means that he's purposely working in the world of delusion. But he's doing this to fulfill his vow rather than to serve his ego. This is really profound and yet so simple, right? We see the oneness sometimes. But in order to to fulfill our vow. We say it every, our four vows. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Actually, I think I'll change it to I vow to free them. But in order to fulfill that vow, he has to work, we have to work with all of the pieces. So with all of those beings, doesn't mean all of them, but it means with every being. So whichever being, whoever being we meet, so every being Bloom meets, he works with throughout his day in Ulysses. And it's clear for us. We can see the difference between Freddie and Marlene, or Lisa and Debbie. I mean, it's just obvious, right? There's no problem there. We have more difficulty seeing the oneness, right? And yet, there are moments when we do see that oneness, that we're not separate. First, we see that we are not a separate self. And then we see that the others are also not separate self. So once we've seen that, and in order to fulfill our vow, we work with the pieces, which are the individual parts, the individual aspects, manifestations of the oneness of Mu. And we then meet people where they are, as Gena Roshi told me. We see people, in their entirety, who they are, without expecting them to be anything different. And then that's how we work with them. That's how we interact. That's how we love. That's how we join together on a project. That's how we sit together. We recognize that we're all these very different appearances on our screen. And yet we're all one on my screen. It's all one. And yet there's the different parts on the screen. But it's all one. Now Bernie says, that means the Bodhisattva is purposely working in the world of delusion. The world of delusion is the world of separation. We say delusion is separation and enlightenment is oneness. So when we're stuck, when we're deluded, we don't see the oneness and we see only the separation. So that's why we say that's the world of delusion. The Bodhisattva accepts entirely to work there. There is no other place to work. There is no other place to love. There is no other place to share. There is no other place to be as we, this manifestation, except in the world of delusion. And the Bodhisattva accepts that entirely. Like in Ulysses, Bloom accepts that entirely and just goes off. He has to leave his house in the morning and he can't go home all day because he knows his wife's lover is coming and he, of course, doesn't want to be there. And he's even accepting that his wife has a lover. He's very upset about it and disturbed. And, really doesn't like the guy. And yet, he's accepting it and going out into the world and meeting whatever arises, whoever he meets. The Bodhisattva does this, as Bernie says, in order to fulfill her or his vow to free all sentient beings, not to, what does he say? Not to serve his ego. So when we become lost in the delusion, it's because we're serving our ego, we're serving ourselves. When we don't become lost, we're serving others. In fact, the way to not become lost is to serve others. The way to become lost or stuck is to serve oneself, only oneself. we have to be careful. It doesn't mean we don't serve ourselves, but it's we don't serve only ourselves. And when I was at that meeting during the weekend, it was very, it was rich, it was joyous to meet new people, new teachers, people I'd never met before, people who I've known for more than 20 years, but I never see, to see all these manifestations. And everyone remarked on it in their own way at different moments of all these different manifestations of this one teaching, all these different ways of expressing this one teaching, also this one lineage. But even more than the lineage, this basic Zen teaching that we all share of oneness and diversity. And we were manifesting it there all together. So, yeah. I think that's what I would like to share about Bloom's Day. About our day. We call it Bloom's Day, but it's our day. Every day is Bloom's Day. And yet, this specific day, June 16th, is Bloom's Day. And although it took place in 1904, the book was published in 1922. So in a sense, this is the 100th anniversary of Bloom's Day. And it's Thursday. The original Bloom's Day was Thursday. Which makes it, gives it even more a sense of it's our life. It's now. Our life just as it is. Whatever we're doing today. I did nothing extraordinary today. And yet everything I did was extraordinary. And I'm no one special, and yet I am extraordinary, just like each of you. Comes back to my Dharma name. You are that, once again. So, once again, happy Bloom's Day. And I would love to hear if you have anything to say, share, tell us about your day, where you've been, what you did, who you saw. Joa?
Hi, everyone. what you just said with this quote of Bernie reminded me of something that totally blew my mind. Last week, when I was in London, I was doing a retreat, and it was taking place in a convent, in a Catholic convent. And it was the third time I was going there. And I, for the first time, I realized I had never paid attention. On the right, on the entrance hall, on the right, there was a big painting. And it said, "Serving God with joy," was written that. Serving God with joy. And then I looked at the depiction of the various parts, and it was like various scenes. And all the scenes were about serving people. And I thought it was so interesting. The way to serve God is actually to serve people, or the way the serving people is a manifestation of serving God. I mean, you can take it the way you want it. It's like, I was so moved by that. And it was nothing abstract. It was, and it was the illustration of it. And then I entered, and I also went for the first time in the chapel in the back at the end of the corridor, and I had never gone there. And the first thing that I saw was in front of the pulpit, there was a sign that read, "I am the way, the truth," and something else. It didn't say, "Jesus said, I am the truth, the way, etc." Or they didn't say, "The apostle said Jesus was the," no, "I am the," so it reminded me of your name. It's like, you are this. So you're reading it and like, "I am the way." This is what I'm reading. "I am the way." And I was so inspired by it. I felt like I was in the middle of, you know, there were like koans everywhere. It was very inspiring. It made me kind of connect to the teachings of Jesus kind of somehow differently. Not too abstract, and didn't seem foreign to me anymore at that moment. Otherwise my day was rather uneventful, but oh yeah, I mean, I just ended a talk with meditation group about questioning. Talked about questions. That's it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's so true, huh? That all of the great spiritual traditions all return to the same point. And that, you know, Christ very famously said that, you know, and was crucified for it. We know that. Great.
Hi, everybody.
Okay. I'd like
to come back to this, what you were saying about knowing, seeing the surface just before you see the depth. And I've been thinking about this in terms of the people I work with at Petit Frère. I do not understand these women. And I'm probably angry a little bit because I don't understand them. I can get angry when I don't understand things. And yet I want to, I mean, we spend a lot of time together. We work together on different projects for other people that make other people happy. So there's something good coming out of it. But when you're talking about this business of coming, being with people where they are, I realize I don't understand where they are. The more I get to know them, the more I realize I do not understand where they are. And when I was thinking about that today, because I haven't seen them for a while, and I've been sick, and it was really a relief not to have to keep going over all the things I don't understand, I was thinking that may be the case in a lot of situations where I am annoyed by people's behaviors because I don't understand where they are. And I don't know maybe it's my question. So what can I do about that? I mean, one of the reasons I am, and I don't mean that, well, yes, I do mean, I come from a different place, went through different things. They seem to be the three women that I deal with to have more of a common ground. So I'm the one that's not the same. They understand each other, and I don't understand them. And I don't know what to do, except just wait, I guess, until I get to know them better. But
yeah, and that explains a lot about our world today, is we often don't understand each other. And so we need to, I guess maybe what, if we go back to that quote of the surface and the depth, is by understanding we're trying to go into the depth without this going to the surface. And by the surface, I mean, just what's the basic, you know, what's the basic emotion they're expressing, or what's the story they're telling without understanding the story, or, you know, all of the details, because there's cultural, social, you know, personal history differences that are, you know, seem insurmountable. The differences just seems insurmountable. And yet, you know, like Bernie Glassman said at Auschwitz, first time I was there, the only thing we have in common are our differences. So we can start by listening and not trying to understand, maybe, and not understanding, implies not knowing, you know. And when we don't know or don't understand something, there's kind of, there's fear that can arise, and anger results behind anger, there's fear. And that fear comes from not knowing, not understanding, not being able to like situate or control. And we all can recognize, I can recognize this, you know, I have definitely a trait like that. So maybe what the best thing we can do is just, okay, put aside the trying to understand someone who we think is completely different than us, and we don't share their political views, we don't share their cultural, you know, preferences, we don't share their, you know, we're not part of the same gender, you know, we can find all kinds of differences. We don't like the same food. I like pizza and they like sushi, you know, all kinds of stuff. Professional differences, class differences, economic differences. It's unlimited, the differences. So we have to put those aside, or just not focus on that and stay with just what is here now. You know, what is it that we share? That we don't know what that is necessarily. And yet sometimes if we just listen without going into the our opinions and our ideas and our projections, it becomes, we can feel what it is, what we share. It's not always easy. And it doesn't mean that you won't still be frustrated, or you won't want to spend all your time with them, or it doesn't mean you have to like it, but it changes how you experience them.
Well, the main problem is they're seriously not an apple. And I can, and it looks like it to me, it's self-imposed to a certain extent.
What did you say? Seriously?
Not happy.
I'm not happy yet. Yeah. Well, we know that that is, yeah. Our unhappiness, we're responsible for that. Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't mean that they're to blame, but it is true that we, you know.
But since they don't see it that way, I can't really talk them into that viewpoint.
No, not at all.
And if they did see it that way, they could maybe change things that make them less unhappy. But I don't know. I can't get into their world enough to.
You know, we can look at, I was telling somebody else that this recently, no one on the screen, I think. You know, we can use a grid based on needs and desires sometimes to meet people. There's a big difference between needs and desires. And most of our problems come from not recognizing the difference. In fact, our whole culture would, I mean, this is a big dream, but things would be a lot different if we paid attention to our needs and responded to them, rather than paid attention to our desires and responded to those. Because, you know, we need to eat, but we desire caviar and champagne. Maybe. And so we spend our time trying to satisfy that desire for caviar and champagne, which means that, you know, we're using resources that could be used to satisfy our own needs and many other people's needs. Instead of hogging all the resources, not satisfying the needs of someone else, so that we can have our caviar and champagne. This is a really simplistic example, but it's to just to point out what the difference between needs and desires are. And the right amount, then. So, you know, when I talk about really hearing what people who are unhappy are saying, it has to do with, you know, what is there's some need there that's being expressed, but in a way that is maybe blurred or confused with desires. And it's so deeply ingrained to function like that, since, you know, these women are obviously not young children, and they've been doing this for decades. You know? So it becomes entrenched that we don't pay attention to our needs, or our needs are not paid attention to by others. And then it all becomes mixed up and confused. And if we can, and it sounds kind of simplistic, but it does really, if we can really listen to, okay, well, what's the need that's being expressed there? What is this person, what's really their heart, in their heart? There was this teaching during my weekend where this guy pointed out that corrupt, you know, the word corruption, the etymology of that, he said it's, you know, like from the etymology of heart, cœur, ruptured, broken, or twisted, which is very interesting. So something that's corrupt is a twisted hurt. And often we say that hate is an expression of twisted love or dissatisfied, unsatisfied love. But for that, we have to listen beyond the story and the, you know, all the stuff that's being presented. When someone's unhappy, you know, there's some deep need that's not being satisfied there.
I feel also there's the other aspect is the inability to relate, or a difficulty to relate, is very much also based on our own conditioning, our own reactivity, and focusing also on what is it that is that I'm reacting to, and what's the story that fuels my reactivity. Like what you said, Debbie, like if they, or maybe, you know, a wish, like, oh, I wish they would understand, or I wish they would be, you know, they would be more happy, or I wish, you know, like what is actually fueling our kind of reactive patterns that makes it difficult for us to relate also. And looking at our reactive patterns and what's fueling our reactive patterns in that difficult relationship.
Oh. Right, because like their conditioning is brought them to this position of unhappiness. Our own conditioning brings us to hear or not hear or behave, like Joa says, react in a certain way. But if we can come back to the, return to the very basic teachings of, you know, oneness and diversity, and seeing our true nature and the true nature of all things, then that changes how we look at our conditioning, how we look at our patterns, how we look at others' conditioning and patterns, changes everything. That's why we sit. Ready?
Today was so hot. It was a canicul. And I was with my bike, and how do I say that? La roue arrière, j'ai crevé. How do you say that in English?
Your back tire was flat.
Yes, it was awful. So I had to walk for 5 kilometers with my bike, and it was hot. It's so difficult to be a human being. It's so easy. We want to be human having. The wanting. We want, or we don't want. We don't want to be human being. We want to have. We want to be somewhere else. Especially when it's hot, you don't want to be outside. You want to be inside. And today was so hot. And I had to do many things, and I had to be outside. To be a human being is really to be inside.
Well, and that's a really good example of how we suffer when things aren't like we want them to be. You know, they don't go as planned. You get a flat tire. It's really hot, and you have to walk 5 kilometers with it. It's like that, not what we want, and then we suffer, right? You know, it's absolutely understandable, completely normal, you know? And that's kind of a metaphor for our whole life. We come back to talking about unhappiness. You know, that's the root of all unhappiness, yeah, right there. A hot day and a flat tire on your bike. Lisa?
Hello, everyone. Well, first, happy Bloom Day to you. My day was actually, I guess I was lucky because I had a meeting all day in this place, actually not far from where I live, and they had air conditioning. I never had air conditioning. So it was actually quite cool. I was like, ooh, that's nice. Because our flat is super hot. We're under the roof. So actually today is not that bad, apparently. Tomorrow will be. But yeah, so you don't want to be here when it's super, super hot. But anyway, so I guess, yeah, it was, anyway, that was my day. And different from the other days, because I've been working a lot on, well, mainly on internal stuff. And today we had one of our board meetings, and it was, and I went. It's not one that I have to be necessarily that I have to participate in, but I decided, okay, now today I want to do something different, and let me do that. And that was, yeah, voila, that was my day. And it got me on time to our sitting today because I got home early, which never happens.
Great. I love hearing about everyone's days. It's like the Heart of Life retreat we used to do. Marlene, you put on your sound. Great.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Well, finally I got COVID. I think for the last week, nothing very dramatic. Like a constipation, yeah, cough. But my mother had ASI too. And we lived three people in the house, my mother, me, and my cousin, Susanna. She has no symptoms, and she is the one that smokes a lot. And but she has nothing for the moment, nothing in her lungs or in this respiratory. Yeah, and it was a coincidence because it was the last weekend that Miriam and William were there. The weekend that they left Monday. It was this big weekend. We had 4 days of holiday since Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So I don't have the answer of my test yet, though I think I started for more than a week. And finally, today was my best day, and I feel almost recovered. So there I went to Carvalhinho. I spent the day with animals, but what it was different, it was I was painting, so it was like being with the kind of things that I like, animals and painting. I was painting clouds and rocks in paper sheets, very rapid, several of them. Yeah, and it was like this last week was because the symptoms come and then they go back, and it was like I had nothing. And so it was like at least two Marlenes that are at the same time, as if something was very slow in my mind, very slow searching what's going on. And it was the normal life at the same time, because I never went to bed, really. But it was like a different passage of time. It was very slow because at the end I did nothing except for meals, and I didn't go out. And it was like passing the time and staying with this condition that was really nothing at the same time. It was COVID condition, but it was not very difficult. So it was like this week of suspension, and at the same time it felt so good that nothing worse was arriving. And at the same time, yes, I am there, my mother is well, let's see, it is not getting worse. So it's kind of just finding this opportunity to be present, but without nothing really different happening, you know? Nothing was really, really different, but at the same time, it was a long week, and I'm glad for the last 24 hours. It's my first day really well, because the difference exists, of course. No more cough, no sudden transpirations. And yeah, but it was good. It was a kind of slow motion process of being with it without really nothing very different happening. It's what I have to say. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear you're okay.
Yeah.
It's true, and those are very strange moments of time is different, and like, even though you weren't terribly sick, and your life was still, it was different than if you had not, you know. So Those are really precious moments, in fact.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that the weather changed a little bit in the direction, in the north direction. It was too hot by us the last week, and today it's not so hot, a little bit raining, and it's very good. My day, it was working like other days. I do fermentation. I'm a little bit tired, like the days I do that. But it's a strange week. So many holidays, 3 days and weekends, every Portuguese out of Lisbon, all the tourists in Lisbon. It's very strange. It's I stay at home and work. It's the best place. It's not so hot. It's I didn't have this problem with my bike. And it's a nice day, and it's a luxus to have the Dharma talk at the end.
Yes, I've been in Lisbon on those festival days. I didn't realize it was only tourists, but I was one of them. And I was with some of you, so I wasn't the only one, right? So
you were there?
I was. I was there in, I think it was 2019.
Ah, okay.
When Lara got married.
And, yes, you were there.
Yeah. We went to Alfama with João and his boys, and Anna, my daughter.
Yes, we were there in the Cascais. But this weekend, it's so incredible because it's a big chaos in this city. Hospitals didn't work, airports didn't work. It's good to be at home, quiet. It's really, I feel that the people are exhausted from these 2 years, from pandemic and now this war, everybody is. And this week, holiday, it's like nothing works. Nothing. Nobody wants to work, and it's nothing. We don't have. I think it's a real manifestation of exhaust. I don't know the word to be tired of this moment.
Well, it's also a really interesting metaphor. Maybe we'll end with this: that for, you know, you say it's such a relief to be at home with all of that stuff going on and the exhaustion of it and everything. And that also applies to being home in ourselves. When we can be at home with ourselves, if we can truly come home, then the frenzy of the world, you know, of the deluded world is not, doesn't affect us in the same way. It's such a relief to be at home, come home to oneself. And that's what happens at the end of Ulysses too, Bloom goes home. So we've come full circle. Thank you all for your sharing of your days. Stay cool for those of you in France. It is hot. It's going to be hotter tomorrow. And maybe in the UK too, I don't know. I saw that it was raining in Coimbra today, so Portugal is like the world upside down. Okay, let's say our vows and then stop here. I guess so. Yeah.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Let us awaken, awaken, take heed, do not squander your life.
Thank you, João. Thank you, everyone. I remind you, we have the study group on Saturday. And the usual sittings, morning and evening.
There are still two places. We still have two beds on the, for the summer retreat in Portugal. And of course there are place available with tents or sleep in the zendo or whatever. So if you
Claudia did Claudia contact you?
No. She's thinking about I can
yeah, she I told her to talk to you. Huh?
Oh, Claudia, okay.
Claudia, French Claudia.
Okay.
True way.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.